Hello, everybody. Welcome to session number 6. My name is Dick, and I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Mary. I'm an alcoholic. Let's start with the set-aside prayer. God, please let me set aside everything I think I know about sobriety, life, and you, so that I may be open to a new experience. Amen. Let's recap where we are in the process. We've gone through the instructions for the fourth and fifth step. So at this point, you've done a lot of writing, and especially in that fourth column where we show up, my mistakes, we use the same four words in each of the three inventories. So in the fourth column, we saw the words selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened. We wrote those over and over again. We then shared all of this with another person in confidence. And this is very important because as we move on to steps 6 and 7, we're going to have to be very aware of what showed up in the fourth column.
And to review, I think we said this before, but we do not show up on our fourth step. We are not on that first column. We show up in the fourth column in our mistakes, but our name is not on the front of the first column of a fourth step. That's selfish, and we're trying to get rid of selfishness.
Thank you. So let's go to the top of page 76. If we could answer to our satisfaction, what? The questions that we were directed to on page 75 at the bottom, those four questions that you shared with the person who heard your fifth step. You did this 1 hour after you returned home. So if we can answer to our satisfaction those questions on the previous page, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable?
No, it's the fourth column of the fourth step. Those are the things in us which we're going to ask to have God remove.
And these are the things, when we admitted them, we also did that in person, face to face, with our sponsor or another person who would have heard our fifth step. Can he, meaning God or our higher power, now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing.
And that's the sixth step prayer. God, help me be willing to turn these things, to get rid of these things, to give them to God.
Isn't that interesting? That paragraph is the total direction for how to take step 6. It's essentially making sure we're willing to have God remove all of those things that we wrote in our fourth column regarding our mistakes.
Pretty short paragraph, but lots of stuff to do, getting ready.
I like to do this face-to-face rather than on the telephone with the person I'm working with, and then move right into step 7 once they admit they're willing. When ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defective character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows.
There may be some character defects which God wants to use. We don't know which ones they are, but it's God's choice, and so he may decide to make me hold on to some of those character defects. I'm pretty sure selfishness isn't one of them, however.
Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen.
That's an interesting word. They use amen at the end of this prayer. It's the first time they've used that word in this book. Now, we've been introduced, as we know, to lots and lots of prayers. The third step prayer, the 5 or so prayers that we were introduced to in the fourth step, fifth step, and sixth step we just saw. Why isn't there an amen at the end of each one of those other prayers? Some big book scholars that I'm familiar with suggest that in the Christian tradition, amen means I'm done with the prayer. I'm offering it up, right? It's actually a Hebrew word which means I believe this. So why haven't we seen that word? Some big book scholars believe that all of the work we did from 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 are all part of the same prayer. We weren't done until we got here.
So there we have the instructions for the seventh step. It's essentially a prayer. And once we've done that out loud with another person, we can then move on and it says we have then completed step 7.
It doesn't say that we do that with somebody, but this is a contact sport. This is not a solitary exercise.
And in practice, of course, a lot of people do it with their sponsor because we're working the steps with one person, not parceling out the steps to different people. Now we need more action.
Not thinking.
Without which we find that, quote, faith without works is dead.
That's in quotation marks because it is a quote from the Bible. It's from James 4:10 if you're interested in looking that up. And now we're talking about the difference. Remember when we had the conversation about the difference between faith and the belief? We started with belief in step 2, or even a willingness to believe. Now we've worked the steps. We now begin to get to the place of faith. We get to a place where we believe, we have faith that these steps are going to work.
And the way they're going to work is to continue with the action, and that's what they're trying to emphasize here. Let's look at steps 8 and 9.
So in the book, the step 8 and 9 instructions are woven together. It's sometimes kind of hard to ferret out which is 8 and which is 9. But that's why when we're in step meetings, so often when it's on step 8, people will kind of morph into step 9. When the step meeting is on step 10, we'll be to let it morph into our list making. So let's, when we're looking at this, step 8 is a list making. It is not a time to edit. We're not going to take away the people who we might not want to make or we believe we're not going to make amends to in step 9. This is a list making. We're going to put all the names, as we're directed to in these instructions, on our 8th step list. At step 9, working closely with our sponsor, we might edit the list, but not now.
So let me read you the actual step as it was recounted on page 59. Step 8 says, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
You'll notice that Mary emphasized the word wherever. Sometimes you'll hear that read in AA meetings that they'll say whenever, and there is a major difference between whenever and wherever. Whenever assumes time is a time indicator. Wherever is a proximity indicator. It means that I'm going to do these amends face-to-face. We'll get to that in a moment.
We have a list of all persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory.
So our fourth step, we need our fourth step inventory to do our eighth step. So we don't want to burn the fourth step after we're done with our fifth step. We don't want to throw it away or whatever. We're going to need it now.
And they're telling us because we made it when we took inventory,
right. We
subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal.
So what that means is we're going to take the names from our four-step inventories and put them on an eight-step list.
No editing at this point in time.
So then I'm going to subject myself to a drastic self-appraisal. I'm going to go back through my life and ask myself, who did I hurt that I may not have hurt through my sex conduct or who I didn't have a resentment against? For me, that was credit card companies. I got pretty good at stiffing the credit card companies. I didn't have a resentment against them. When I was drinking, I'd sitting on the bar stool, I might even tell you how to do that. I'd give you instructions on how you could do that too. But I harmed them. Getting a fraudulently obtained credit card is not the deal that the bank made. And then not paying them for the charges that I incurred on that credit card was not the deal. They were harmed. They're going to go on my 8-step list by bank name, by credit card issuer name.
Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris or junk which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves.
So there's the instructions for step 9. Did you see the word apologize anywhere in there? I didn't. I'm a dictionary guy. I inherited that from my father. I own several dictionaries, and one going back to the 1860s. In every one of those dictionaries, whether it's a modern day dictionary or one all the way back into the 30s or to the 1860s, I have never found the word apologize anywhere in the definition of the word amend. To apologize is not an amend. An amend, we're going to go out to our fellows and repair the damage. We're going to fix what we did wrong if it's at all possible.
If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. So there's a prayer. God, help me be prepared to go out and sweep away the debris. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Probably there's still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident or lacking self-reliance, a little queasy about the whole thing, about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us.
So that's why we do this work. I can't help somebody else, another alcoholic, do any eighth step list or ninth step amends if I haven't done it. So my purpose is to do this work so that I can share that experience with another alcoholic.
It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts for our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong.
So very often, we're going to have to ask the person that we're making the amend to, how can I fix what I did in the past? Because a lot of times we caused the harm while we were drinking or drunk. And we may not know exactly how we harmed them. We oftentimes have to ask them. We might have a pretty good idea, but we've got to make sure we're covering the bases.
He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. So again, he's going to be wanting to know how we're going to right the wrong rather than just some highfalutin talk. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense.
So now we're going to have the first of five amends categories. This is the one that I call the enemies category.
The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth.
That's a horse racing expression, that a horse, when it's going to run, bites down on the bit. Most of these people in their early lives had driven horse and buggies as their form of transportation, or at least sometimes they had, and so they were familiar with horses, and they knew that when a horse was going to run, he bites down on the bit.
So they're going to run forward to work on their amend. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Under no condition.
So that's, instead of using the word apologize, if I go to somebody and I start to make an apology at the beginning of an amend, the person listening to the amend may have a reaction like, there he goes again, he's just apologizing, he doesn't get it. An apology also, there's an inherent asking for forgiveness. And that's not what we're doing here. So I would suggest to you that you use the word regret rather than an apology. I regret what I did in the past. And it's going to evoke a different response in the part of the person who's listening to the amend. They're going to think, well, I've never heard him do that before. And I'm going to be able to clear the deck so that I can make the amend.
I also add the word, God willing, it shall not be repeated. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We're there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result.
Well, that's a nice promise, isn't it? That we're going to be gratified with the result. If our manner is calm, frank, and open.
In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour.
So I've had that experience.
Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress.
Nice promise.
Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office.
And I've had that experience. So, you know, we're going to have those, and I didn't die from them.
We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Here's type 2, the creditor.
Most alcoholics owe money. Well, duh, do you think so? We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. So the creditors in the time the book was written was usually the local grocery store, the local gas station, the local hardware store, those kinds of people. They were all citizens of the community that people lived in. Not so much anymore. Today we use credit cards that are by national banks or national card holder issuers. And so we may think that a lot of those people don't know that we're probably heavy drinkers or alcoholics. But they actually do. The people on the end of the phone when we're trying to make deals with payment plans and so on, they kind of get it. So there is some truth to that even today.
Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us.
Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we're sorry. So we're going to need some help here. Very often, alcoholics are not the best financial managers, and we need to arrange the best deal we can. That's going to mean that we need to have a budget. I'm not talking about a fancy spreadsheet kind of thing. I'm talking about a back of the envelope kind of a budget. We're going to need to know how much money we make every month. Many alcoholics do not know how much money they make. Well, how can that be, Dick? You're thinking to yourself. Because most people in the United States today, or U.S. and Canada, are paid weekly or biweekly, once a week or once every 2 weeks, and there are 4 1/3 weeks in a month. Oh my goodness, there's those crazy fractions, which I didn't do well even in school. Now I got to do them again. There's a way to do that. If you don't know how, listen in AA meetings till you find somebody who may talk about that he and his wife did a budget or whatever. Find somebody who can help the men or women that you're working with make a budget. We need to know how much money we make. What's our housing cost? If it's just rent, that's pretty easy. If you own your own home, you got a mortgage payment. You might have
insurance
and taxes and all those kinds of things. We need to know how much our housing costs are. We need to know what our transportation costs are. If it's simply a bus pass, that's pretty easy to calculate. But if you own a vehicle, there's lots of costs involved in owning a vehicle. How much is the payment for the vehicle? How much is gas, oil, tires, oil changes, that sort of thing? We need to get to how much is our transportation costing us? How much are groceries? I've yet to meet a man that I've worked with in AA who knows how much money their family spends on groceries. Usually they have to go back to the wife and ask, how much do I spend on groceries? The reason, what we're trying to do is get to the bottom. And the bottom line is, how much money do I have left each month after I've paid all my fixed expenses, groceries, telephone, transportation, housing, all of that kind of expense. And let's use the example that you have $25 a month left after all of those payments are made. So when I call the electric company that I stiffed at the last apartment I lived in, I call them and I say, I know I owe you the money, I need to make a payment plan. And they come back to you and say, well, we see your bill is $100, and how about if you pay us $25 a month? I now have the tools to be able to say to them, I only have $25 a month, and I have 5 of you that I have to pay every month. I have 5 creditors I'm attempting to pay back. How about if I send you $5 a month? And the person you're talking to on the phone will have one of 2 answers for you. The first one is, okie dokie, that would be just fine. When do you want to start making those payments? The other would be, well, that's beneath the amount of money that I am authorized to accept. I'll have to turn you over to my supervisor. And the supervisor will come on the phone, and after a little bit of a conversation, the supervisor will say, okie dokie, thank you very much, when do you want to start? You see, $5 a month is more than they have been getting so far. And they want their money back. And they're happy to. Now, they might ask you to send them a photocopy of that little back of the envelope budget that you have just for their records. And you can do that. That's not a big deal. So we need to be able to have some tools to arrange the best deal we can here. Because we don't want to commit to sending them $25 a month when we don't have $25 a month. So we got to be careful of that, because that's going to make that matter worse. So
we don't need to be making amends for our men.
Yeah.
Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we're liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
So here's the way that looks. You get those windowed envelopes in the mail. It says a stamp on the outside of the envelope, important, past due, maybe in red ink. I know what those are. Come on, you're not fooling me any. So if before I started making payments to people, I would throw those in the wastebasket. I'd get a knot in my stomach. And after I do that week after month after a long period of time, I get this knot just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger in my stomach. I know how to get rid of the knot in my stomach. I'll just go out and drink my brains out for a little bit. I'll forget all about it. So that's why it will enable liable to drink if I'm afraid to face them. I need to face these people. And you will be amazed when you start this work how easy it really is. The people just want their money back.
You'll lose the fear after you face them.
Right. So this is the next category. I call it the criminal offense category. So do they, actually.
Perhaps we have committed a criminal offense which might land us in jail if it were known to the authorities. We may be short in our accounts and unable to make good. We have already admitted this in confidence to another person.
That's the fifth step.
But we are sure we would be imprisoned or lose our job if it were known. Maybe it's only a petty offense, such as padding the expense account. Most of us have done that sort of thing. Maybe we are divorced and have remarried, but haven't kept up the alimony to number one. She's indignant, meaning just filled with anger about it, and has a warrant out for our arrest.
So it's when you see alimony in this, that doesn't happen a lot anymore in the courts in the United States. So think child support.
That's a common form of trouble, too. Although these reparations,
or attempts to repair,
take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding.
So although these attempts to repair take many, many different forms,
reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be.
So there's an eight-step prayer. We ask that we be given the strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be.
We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
So we are not one of the others that are going to be in the ninth step, except when to do so would injure them or others. We have to do whatever is necessary. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
So I like the fact that the prayer could also be used in the ninth step as you're preparing to go out and repair the past.
Right.
Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit.
So that means if Joe and I worked at a hardware store and we closed up every Friday night, and we each took a $10 bill out of the till for our own, we stole from our employer. When I get sober, it's not okay for me to go back to the owner of the hardware store and say, Joe and I stole $10 each every Friday night when we closed up the place. I don't have Joe's permission. It's not okay for me to sacrifice Joe so that I can get a clear conscience. I need to be careful of that. I also can't say, I stole from you every Friday night, because the owner of the store is going to say, well, where was Joe?
A man we know had remarried. Because of resentment and drinking, he had not paid alimony to his first wife. She was furious. She went to court and got an order for his arrest. He had commenced our way of life, meaning he'd started doing the steps, had secured a position, so he had a job, and was getting his head above water, starting to pay off some of his debts, perhaps. It would have been impressive heroics if he had walked up to the judge and said, "Here I am." We thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary, but if he were in jail, he could provide nothing for either family. We suggested he write his first wife admitting his faults and asking forgiveness. He did, and also sent a small amount of money.
So you notice he put the money where his mouth was. The best of intentions don't get us anywhere. We have to send. We have to show that we're earnest about this.
So that empty promise or asking for forgiveness would mean nothing unless it was actually...
Here's a little dough.
Yeah. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. Of course she did not, and the whole situation has long since been adjusted.
Of course she didn't. All she wanted was her money.
Before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent.
So that's like Joe and me at the hardware store, Joe and I at the hardware store. I need to secure Joe's consent if I'm going to involve him. If he's not sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, he's probably not going to give it to me.
If we have obtained permission, have consulted with others, ask God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink.
So we're going to skip the next three paragraphs because it's basically just the story of the movie It's a Wonderful Life, which was filmed in the 1930s. So you can read it if you want. The movie does a much better job of explaining it. So we're going to go to the bottom of page 80, the second to last sentence.
Type 4. Domestic troubles or relatives. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if in this respect alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with, quote, the girl who understands, end quote. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him.
So that word girl is really sort of, it's offensive to me even. I can only imagine how offensive it must be to women who read this book. But remember, when they wrote this, this is the way they spoke. They didn't sit around in 1939 and try to figure out a way to irritate every single woman in the 21st century and even a bunch of us guys by using that language. It's not what they did. So when I get irritated over the word girl, get over it, Dick.
Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take.
So these are from pretty good suggestions. If you find yourself in that kind of a position, these are really good suggestions. It's a good place to begin conversations with your sponsor or someone who has been through this. Find a way to make this work. We have a friend who this has happened to them, and they used this, consulted with their sponsors, and they just celebrated 50 years of marriage.
Our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. Keep it always in sight that we are dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk a face-to-face combat.
So if you're not a military person, never been in the military, that might not mean anything to you. What they're talking about is attack it from the side as opposed to head-on.
Type 5 is the family. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober.
The way we hear that today in the 21st century is, oh, I'm making living amends. Let's see what they say about that.
Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents, whom for years he has so shockingly treated.
Living amends come after direct amends, never before.
Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough.
So their attitude is that if you're going to do a living amends, which is what they mean by sobriety is enough, that that's unthinking. What's a synonym for unthinking? Selfish. And what are we trying to get rid of in the 12 steps? Selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. So it's unthinking. It's selfish to say I'm only making living amends. Direct amends come first. Then after that, we put the proof in the pudding. And we do the living amends after we have done that.
He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?"
That usually evokes a chuckle in most AA meetings.
Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all.
So what is going to fit the bill? When I start to make amends, very often I need to make an amend. I have to ask how I can fix the situation. What can I do to go forward from here and have a better relationship, whether it's a business relationship, a family relationship, a relationship with my children? Very often I need to ask that question. If I don't want to have a relationship, then I have to just simply say, how can I fix this? How can I correct the damage that I've done in the past? We need to ask what their attitude on repairing our relationship or lack of it is.
If they have a restraining order against us, we probably already know what their response is.
Well, yeah, we do. We don't even have to ask the question. They've already told us that the way we fix it is to stay away if there's a restraining order. If we have a restraining order, we don't go back and do another amend. They've told us to stay away.
We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So, when we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love.
So there's a nice, nice step prayer. We ask our Creator to show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love.
The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could.
In this day and age, the people that the some wrongs that we can't fully right are generally people who are dead or whose names we do not know. Because with social media, I can find almost anybody almost anywhere. I can find them. It didn't used to be that way when we had to use telephone books because every city had their own a different phone book. So, but today we can find them with using social media. So it tends to be the people who are dead. And in the case, I'll let Mary read a little more.
Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter.
And I did that with both of my parents who were dead when I came to AA. They had died. So I wrote them a letter, went to the gravesite and read the letter. It was very therapeutic. It seemed helpful. It helped me. I don't know if they heard anything. I'm not aware of those kinds of things.
So think about it. Back in the 1930s, we didn't have airplane travel the way we do now. So there was possibly no way for people to move across the country and do face-to-face amends. So letter writing was very acceptable. Nowadays, for me, if it's a very important amend, I get on the airplane and I fly to my brother or my sister and I make the amend personally. So again, a letter is a substitute, but face-to-face is preferable. And there may be valid reason for postponement in some cases. The only example Dick can think of about postponement is if a person's in jail, correct?
Yeah, if somebody's in jail, it's going to be hard for them to go out and do amends. So.
But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, humble, without being servile or acting like a slave or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
So the next two paragraphs is going to be what you hear in AA all the time referred to as the promises. Well, as we now know, there's promises in every step. So these are the ninth step promises.
And they're going to tell us when they occur. Mm-hmm. If we are painstaking about this phase.
The phase they're talking about is the ninth step.
Of our development. We will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others.
The others that can benefit from our experience are other alcoholics.
That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us.
Now notice it doesn't say that economic insecurity will leave us. It says fear of economic insecurity will leave us.
We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They, meaning these promises, will always materialize or show up if we work for them.
If we work for them. If we continue to do the AA work.
So Dick likes to tell us that he has had 100% success in all of his amends.
Every amend I've made has been 100% successful. I've never done an amend with anybody that wasn't successful. I stayed sober. That's why we do this work, is so that I can stay sober and I can carry the message to the next alcoholic.
So this thought, which thought? The thought that the promises will materialize if we work for them. This thought brings us to step 10. So we're continuing to work, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So isn't that interesting? They use the word mistakes again. It's the same word we used in the fourth column of the fourth step. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past.
So that means we're going to start working on step 10 right away, even though we haven't completed our ninth step amends yet. We're going to be working on those amends. They shouldn't take long, but we're going to move right on into step 10. We do these steps as fast as we can, right away, after each other. So we're going to continue to do the amends, and we're going to also begin to vigorously, we understand what vigorous means, don't we?
With a lot of energy.
Commence or begin this way of living, this 10th step stuff, even though we haven't finished our ninth step amends.
Do you want to talk about Dr. Bob and his...
Yeah, isn't it interesting? If you read Dr. Bob's story, which is Dr. Bob's nightmare, which is right at it heads the story section of our book, he did his ninth step amends in one day, all of them, 100% of them. Now, it was a different time. Dr. Bob lived in the same house for 40 years or however long he was in Akron, Ohio. From the time he did his residency until he died, he lived in the same house in Akron, Ohio. We don't do that anymore. We move around. I mean, you know, when I was drinking, I had 15 different homes in 10 years. So it's going to be a little bit harder for us, but you get the idea. We do them as quickly as we possibly can.
We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
Those sound a little familiar? They're the same words we used in the fourth step, the fourth column of the fourth step.
When these crop up.
Not if, but when. And here's the instructions for the 10th step. Number one.
We ask God at once to remove them.
Number two.
We discuss them with someone immediately.
And three.
And make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone.
And number four.
Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help.
What's resolutely mean?
With determination.
So the steps for the pieces of the tenth step are, if I've harmed somebody, if I've been selfish and it's harmed somebody, I'm going to ask God at once to remove that character defect. God, please, I'm getting so tired of this. Please remove that. Number two, I'm going to discuss it with someone immediately. So if I'm working on an assembly line at the Ford plant in Detroit, I got to call a supervisor over. I got to have him shut down the assembly line so I can call my sponsor. It's not what they said. What they said is discuss them with someone so I can talk to the guy next to me on the assembly line. I hate that when they do that. Number three, I'm going to make amends quickly if I've harmed anybody. So, gee, Joe, I really regret what I just said to you. I'm sorry. How can I fix that? And number four, I'm going to resolutely turn our thoughts to someone I can help. Another alcoholic is the person that we are most effective with in helping. But I can also help my boss by working an extra 5 minutes on the line for somebody who's a little late. There's lots of ways that I can be helpful to other people in our society. I am, however, most effective in working with other alcoholics.
Love and tolerance of others is our code.
We have a code now.
And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. That's a nice promise. And here's an even better one. For by this time, sanity will have returned.
So they're telling us that by the time we start doing the 10th step, sanity will return. Now, they're not talking about legal insanity or sanity. They're not talking about clinical insanity or sanity. A psychiatrist would not dub us insane. What they mean by that, they will tell us in the next sentence.
We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil or draw back from it as from a hot flame.
So it's how we react to alcohol that is the nutsoid part of what we are. It's not a clinical insanity. It's normal people, if they had the problems with alcohol that we have, would just stop drinking. But we suffer from an obsession of the mind.
We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. So imagine that obsession has been taken away. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed.
On page 45, we were told that the object of the book was to enable us to find a power greater than ourselves which will solve our problem. 40 pages later, on page 85, they tell us the problem's gone. The obsession of the mind has gone, and if we don't drink, we don't trigger that physical allergy. The problem is gone. It does not exist for us.
We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience.
That's the experience of the first 100. They all agreed that that's their experience.
That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
So how are we going to do that? Well, they're going to tell us.
It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels.
A laurel is a wreath that the Greeks put on the heads of winning athletes. If you remember the 2000 Olympics, if you happen to see that, where we were in Athens, Greece. It was a commemoration of the very first Olympics centuries ago. They put a wreath on the head of the winning athletes, and then they would put the Olympic medal around their neck. Those wreaths on their head were made from the leaves of a laurel tree, and they are called laurels. So what they're saying here is it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our prior deeds, our prior awards.
We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve or relief, contingent, meaning depending upon, the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities.
There's that pesky word must again.
And here's the 10-step prayer. Mm-hmm. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Thinking about that prayer, we can always shorten it right down to thy will be done. And that refers us right back to that third step, where we turned our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him.
And once again, our will is our thinking, our lives is our actions.
These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will.
So it's the now we have our will back. It's we can use it to place those prayers and this program into our conscious thought process.
And we're bringing it in accordance with God's will. Mm-hmm. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions...
Look what they call the steps. Not suggestions, directions.
We have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action.
Not more thinking, but more action. So we're going to move on now to step 11.
Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy in this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions.
So I have a very religious siblings. My sister and my brother are both deeply religious people, go to church regularly. It's just, you know, that's who they are. And I've had an opportunity to go through this material with my sister particularly, and she indicates to me that some of this prayer work, these suggestions are valuable. She was quite impressed with them. But I love the fact that the book is written by alcoholics. Because if I ask my brother or sister, as I have, how can I improve my prayer life? Give me some suggestions for prayers I might do to increase my effectiveness. They will say, well, in the morning, this is what I do. During the day, this is the kind of thing I do. And at night, you can do this. See, they'll give it to me sort of chronologically. That's the way most people talk. Not these guys, not the authors of this book, because they know if they tell me to start something tomorrow morning, by tomorrow morning, I'm going to think to myself, well, I sort of overreacted to that whole thing, find a way to wiggle out of it. So they start me with the very next thing that's going to happen in my life, tonight.
When we retire at night, we constructively review our day.
So now, we told you at the fourth step that we aren't looking for the good stuff. It said in there that we look for the faults, not the good stuff. Now we're going to begin to look at the good stuff. We're going to look at both good and bad. How did my day actually go? How many good things did I do? How many bad things did I do? Where are areas of improvement? So in a lot of the treatment centers and rehabs, they try to put that into the fourth step, which in our program does not show up there. The reason the treatment centers and rehabs do that is because they don't have you long enough to take you through step 11. So they try to sort of meld it in together. It's separate for us.
So again, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid?
Does that sound familiar?
Fourth column, fourth step. Mm-hmm. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Maybe we forgot to do the tenth step. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? So there's a positive. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. So this is not a destructive approach, it's a constructive approach. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken.
So there's the retire at night prayer. God, please forgive what I've done and show me how I can be more effective.
Now we're going to move on to the next day. So this is the daytime or the awakening prayers. On awakening,
notice it says on awakening, not after I've eaten my breakfast, not after I'm driven to the office or to my workplace. This is when we get up in the morning. This is the first thing we do.
On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day.
We're going to consider our spiritual plans, not our material schedule. I have to be at the doctor at noon, and I got to take the kids. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about your schedule. We're talking about your spiritual plan. How am I going to show up today? What kind of a person am I going to be?
Chances are that some of the spiritual plans will be based on the review you did the night before, mm-hmm. the corrective measures you want to take.
Before we begin listening to God, So we're going to do some meditation here. The reason I think that is the case is because the very next half of that sentence says we're going to ask God to direct our thinking. If it stands to reason, if we're asking Him to direct our thinking, that means I'm going to stop and listen and think and be aware of my God consciousness. So before we begin listening to God,
we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives.
Nice little prayer there.
Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here, we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision.
A little prayer there.
We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times.
So, you know that picture of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King standing on the balcony of that hotel in Memphis before he was assassinated? There's what, 10, 12, 15 people standing up there with him? Who are those people? They were his spiritual advisors. Here's one of the most spiritual people of the 20th century, and he has 10, 12, 15 people standing on that deck that are spiritual advisors that he bounces his ideas off of. Well, if it's good enough for him, it'll probably be good enough for me to do that with my sponsor. Maybe I have a spiritual advisor as well.
We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only.
So there's a nice little prayer embedded in that.
We may ask for ourselves, however, if others are to be helped. What does that look like? That looks like a friend of ours who asked for transportation so that he could take his sponsees to meetings. Do you want to expand upon that?
Well, he ended up getting a 57 Cadillac, if you've ever seen one. They're about a block long, and thing burned more oil than gas, and it was this crazy car, but he could put about 15 guys in it, and he was constantly picking up guys and taking them to meetings. So that was God's idea of a sense of humor.
So, again, he didn't pray to have a Ferrari to enhance his ego. He prayed for something that would be of use to others. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily say why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wiser friends to join us in morning meditation.
So when Mary and I married, we've been married 25 years as of this recording, and when we were getting married, Mary came to me and said, I would like to ask for a wedding present. And I thought, uh-oh, she wants money or diamonds or whatever. And we were both sober in AA at the time. And what she said was, she said, I would like to have us pray together. Mornings do not work for us because she had a long commute and I had a very short commute, so we had a different kind of schedule. So evenings worked best, and so we began a process of praying together every evening. We still do that today, although once in a while we do get a little lazy and kind of shorten it up. But generally speaking, we do the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer because we come from very divergent religious backgrounds. So we chose prayers out of our big book to do, and it's, I will tell you that if you pray with somebody at night, it's really, really hard to stay angry at the person that you just prayed with. You might be able to figure out how to do it. We have not.
If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also.
Also. So if somebody belongs to a religious denomination that requires a definite morning prayer regimen, or perhaps you go to church or mass every Sunday or every morning, we don't substitute the prayers in the book for that those kinds of religious practices. We do it in addition to the religious practices.
If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer.
So it's time to stop bashing organized religion. See that maybe we can learn something from those people.
Now here are the prayers for going through the day. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated, not if, so they know we're going to get agitated, or doubtful, and ask for the right thought or action.
To be agitated is when you feel really anxious, when you feel like, I really want to respond to that guy. I'd like to punch him out. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about.
So there's the prayer, mm-hmm. You know.
Give me the right thought or action.
We constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show ourselves. Running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, Thy will be done.
There's another prayer, Thy will be done.
And again, we refer back to the story about the actor and the director on pages 60 and 61, mm-hmm. where we as alcoholics, who are supposed to be the actors, we're trying to be the directors, and now we know better. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves.
And that's been a really neat promise for me. When I got sober, I got a lot more energy.
It works. It really does.
That's Mary told you what the shortest sentence in the book was a while back. This is the shortest paragraph. It's interesting. The longest paragraph is on page 21 where they're describing the so-called real alcoholic. Here, so the description of the alcoholic is the longest paragraph. The solution defined is the shortest paragraph. It works. It really does.
We alcoholics are undisciplined.
The word discipline comes from the Latin word meaning to be teachable.
So in the past, we have not been teachable, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
So we'll end there. We will be doing chapter 7 and chapter 11 in the next sessions. So thank you very much, and we'll see you on the next tape.